the 4th of July holiday dead ahead, unless you're working Monday, like me and like Andrea, who's in the studio. You're not working Monday.
I'm out. I had the good sense to take the week off.
Oh, you're saying I'm senseless?
Well, you know, we were just saying, but the Tuesday, 4th of July is about as bad as it gets, don't you think?
I think it is. That's Andrea Haines, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation. She comes by on most Fridays when she's working to talk about
those rare occasions when I'm the other 51 weeks of the year.
So we'll talk to Andrea in a second. A little bit later, Tom Gimbel comes by from LaSalle Network. And one of the things we're going to talk about with Tom is he actually says the summertime right now is a great time to go job hunting. So we'll pick his brain on that. I'm excited about the second half hour. There are two things. We're going to talk to the Herman brothers, and they are the people you call if you want to stock your pond or actually even build a pond. They do just about everything when it comes to outdoor work. And we checked in with them. I think it was about ice fishing earlier. Would have been last year, but we thought it'd have them come by to talk about digging a backyard pond. I don't know how many people can do that, but that's coming up in the second half hour. All right, Andrea is here. One of the stories in Blue Sky that caught my eye is about Alpana Singh, who we knew from Check Please, right? And as a restaurateur, three restaurants, I think, in the city. And she's got this idea that she's going to she's going to do something about it. I'm going to hire kids or young people who are not in school, do not have jobs, are at-risk neighborhoods, and we're going to make it work. It's hard.
It is hard. We kind of looked at her journey. We were looking at different ways that small business owners and tech companies are hiring. And we thought this was interesting because here is, you know, effectively as a restaurant owner, she's a small business owner and she's looking to hire, you know, be it ex-offenders or people from sort of underserved communities and get them working in her restaurants. But as you kind of walk through the story, which is pretty lengthy for us, you see some of the problems that arise, you know, with trying to do that.
Yeah. And so, and I think she worked with St. Sabina and
they
got a program.
Yep. So that's, you know, hurdle number one is kind of, okay, how do you find people? How do you get this set up? So there's a number of different programs that she worked with or touched base with. She worked with St. Sabina, where Father Flager, you know, they've got a program going where they have a few dozen people that they're helping place into jobs and helping them, you know, navigate the workplace and those kinds of things.
On Monday, I'm going to have an author on who's talking about just how you can do little things at work or what the things you might do. Basically, what it is that what you might think is normal isn't always. So be aware of this and that. And that strikes me because maybe that's a little bit what Alpana has run into, too, because we might think people understand basic rules of employment, but a lot of these people who haven't had jobs really don't, and that's kind of what she's running into.
There is some of that, and you know, if you haven't seen the example of a parent who works or, you know, that kind of thing, it's just things like if you're not going to show up, you have to call in, or if you have to just some of the basic sort of work practices.
Say that again. There was a kid who lost his job because he didn't realize when he was sick that he was supposed to call his job and say, I'm not coming in.
Yeah. And I honestly wouldn't single out these folks for that because I think that happens in a lot of jobs. You know, a lot of jobs you feel like people are kind of like, well, you do realize if you're not here, or, you know, we have work we need to get done. Like, all kind of younger people as they enter the workforce need to learn some of those kinds of things.
Well, that's exactly the point.
There's no makeup class. Like, today's work needs to be done.
That's exactly the point. It's a basis of knowledge that if you haven't gone through it, you haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
Who reported this story?
This was Cheryl Jackson.
Cheryl Jackson, okay, because there's a very touching story about this kid, Deontay Ball, who's 23 years old. He lives, I think it was on the south side. He's working in her Evanston restaurant. And sometimes he sleeps in his car up there because it just helps him get back and forth. There are times when he's living in his car, he doesn't have gas in his car to get to the office, to the restaurant, and his uncle will pick him up and bring him.
And this is sort of the flip side of the challenges, right? It's the challenges that are invisible to the employer's eye and that from their life experience they wouldn't literally even conceive of, that maybe you don't even have the gas money to get back and forth to your job and those kinds of things. So it illuminates some of those things that bosses need to think about. And I do think that because of this story, he hadn't really shared this fact with his employer and others. And so I think that they are stepping up a little bit and hopefully going to figure that out.
I forget who said it in the story. Maybe it was Father Flager, maybe it was Alpana, but the idea is that you have to, it's one thing to have a big heart and to offer these opportunities. You also have to extend a little empathy to understand that they're going through a situation that you probably have not gone through.
Yeah, empathy. And then when you find out about the issues, maybe some practical solutions, like finding a way to get this guy to work.
Okay, speaking of practical, I was in London last summer. My daughter was studying there, and a night of frolicking in Covent Garden and seen a couple plays. And then it came time for her to go to her dorm and us to go to our hotel. So I ordered her an Uber on my Uber account, and then I ordered myself an Uber on my Uber account. My driver showed up first. My wife and I got in the car. We drove away. The other Uber saw that I was moving So he drove. He didn't go pick up my daughter because he's like, oh, this person is already gone.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't order an Uber ride for someone other than you. And Uber's changing that this week.
Yes. So Uber doesn't always get the best press in general, and it doesn't always get the best, you know, it hasn't done the most, people think, to help people that are disabled or need extra services like that. In this case, though, they have done something that's kind of interesting and opens up some possibilities, particularly maybe if you are caring for an older parent or that type of thing, where you can order an Uber for somebody that may not be using a smartphone. So it allows, you know, different ways of communicating with them. It could be text message. There's some ways, but you as the person ordering it can also monitor the ride. You can review the ride and do those functions that you're used to.
Because as it is now, when you order an Uber, the Uber driver sees your GPS location.
Yes, it's and knows where to go. You as an individual. And as you found, I guess, the hard way, there's not really a way to now to divide that out. And, you know, obviously perhaps that person's in a different location entirely. So you don't want them coming to you. You want them going to grandma's house. And now it is allowing a way in the app to do that.
Well, good for them. That's a nice little development. We started the week on the Wintrust Business Lunch with the Inno Boys. And right then, I think they were just learning, or they just posted a story about Mike Evans, one of the co-founders of Grubhub, starting this new business called Fixer. It was intriguing to me. You guys are writing about it as well. You've got a few more details. And well, let's just start with basics. What is Fixer, and what does he hope to prove here?
Yeah, so Fixer is founded by Mike Evans, who was one of the co-founders of Grubhub, one of Chicago's so far biggest success stories in tech. And so he, you know, when he left the company, he did a few things. He took a long bike ride, which we chronicled, actually. We ran his blog post and photos while he was on this cool cross-country bike ride. And at some point, he decided to get back in business, and so created Fixer, which is like on-demand handyman service.
But in between, he also wrote a sci-fi novel.
He did.
And the heroine was someone who fixed... It was a post-apocalyptic or something, but
yes,
she fixed appliances.
And she had some mad skills with fixing things.
Right.
So this is clearly, as he said, on his mind these days.
A very cool thing. So that the idea is that you can call, and within an hour, someone will show up who can do a project. It's got to be one that they can get done in 6 hours or so.
Yeah.
I think they charge $80 or so. But, you know, as someone who, if you might need a quick repair, it's good to know. Now, we've hired handymen for a condo I own, and we pay like $60 an hour. And I know they're charging 80, so maybe it's a little on the high end, but still, it's someone you can get to. We talked about that Monday. What interests me today is the fact that this is going to be a full-time job for these handy men and handy women. They're going to get benefits and everything.
Yes, and so I think hopefully that means higher quality of service is theoretically the idea, because you do have things like TaskRabbit where, you know, you can throw it out there, get somebody to come and all that kind of stuff, but they're maybe doing it for $10 or so, you know, whatever the fee might be. This is like professionals. They're going to have a full-time job with Fixer, so they're kind of, it's just a different model.
So then you will have a company reputation, I guess, because there'll be company workers. It'll be like hiring the Maytag repairman or something like that.
Yes.
But they'll be at your place in an hour.
Yeah, I think that's appealing, because I think setting the appointment is the worst part, right?
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
When can I be home between 11 and 2? Never, you know, because I have to be here. And
or it always happens that, you know, you're making a big holiday dinner party or something.
And the stove goes out.
Yeah. the disposal reacts or something like that.
The air conditioner
breaks. All right, so right now they're just north of Roosevelt Road. When do they take over the world?
Yeah, so, you know, he seems to be a little, you know, I'm sure he knows that expectations are going to be high for a co-founder of Grubhub. So I think they're scaling out a little bit more slowly, and he's not exactly expecting that it's going to be, you know, that big of a blockbuster. But they've done 200 jobs so far, he said.
Nice. Andrea Haynes will watch that. Fixer. Thanks for coming by. Have
a
great weekend.
Have a great 4th.
Summer in Chicago. Welcome to that. In the studio now, Tom Kimble.
Call me whenever you want, Steve.
No, what did I do last week? It's just, I'm not even taking time off. But
it's
I'm
the shine off my head. It's distracting.
It's Tom Kimble here, the CEO, the founder of LaSalle Network. Welcome back.
Good to be here.
And so I teased the fact that you were going to talk a little bit about this summer. There just was a consumer confidence survey out where people thought, I think it was the best time to find a job. The numbers were highest since 2001 or something like that.
Yeah.
And you're saying summertime is a good time to find a job?
Yeah, the traditional feeling is that summer really slows down because a lot of hiring managers and executives, their kids are off of, right? Logically, you move into management as you get older. You have a family, kids are off during the summer, that's when people vacation. And if hiring managers are vacationing, they're not hiring people, which is true to an extent. But there's a lot of people working. The market's really good still. The stock market's up. Companies are hiring. Unemployment's low, and companies need good people. So there are a lot of jobs available right now.
Are the jobs being filled quickly?
depending on your skill set. I mean, what you're seeing in the data is absolutely true. Unemployment's under 5%. So if you're a long-term unemployed, it is hard in that space. But if you're good and you're looking to move to a different role, companies are hiring.
Okay, what should someone do in the summer differently than they might do any other time of year?
Stay active. So I think what you want to make sure you're doing is still, it's very tempting to leave early on a Friday or to go and drink beers on the patio after work, right? But if there's a networking event, go to that to keep your resume updated, to make sure that you're a little bit self-serving. Right, but take the call from the recruiter, have the interview, go do those things. Right. But I think a lot of people are so quick to take a walk after work and get out of here and get on the boat or whatever it is. Don't.
Hey, you know, I've got a guest coming up on Monday, Richard Moran. He wrote a book, just general do's and don'ts about it. And one of the things he said is to make sure that you unplug, that you find a way, whether it's bad TV or a novel, just get away from it, relax, cleanse your sort of mind, clean your mind of things.
Mm-hmm.
You just told me you're off on one of those things?
I am. I've never taken an extended vacation alone, and I haven't taken a vacation of more than a few days in probably a decade.
Right.
And so I finally decided I'm going to Barcelona tonight. I'm flying out and going to be gone all next week.
Now, was this sudden?
No, I decided probably in mid-May that I wanted to do it.
Did you ask people, or are you going by yourself on your own?
No, I'm going alone.
Right.
And
I just was worried that people said no.
Yeah, but which is probably they would have, so I just saved myself the rejection. Right. I have three kids. My daughter's at summer camp, overnight camp. My son's in a baseball tournament. My youngest son is going to spend time with his mom. And I thought, you know what, why not go try this? I've wanted to do it. I've thought about it.
Right.
And now I acted on it.
Are you apprehensive at all?
No, I've got a little bit of anxiety, a touch.
Right, about
but,
what?
Well, I had my assistant help me, and she put my passport name under Edward, my boarding pass under Edward, and my passport's under E. Thomas.
Okay.
So I'm a little nervous I can get on the plane, Steve.
I can help you with that.
I appreciate that. But otherwise, no, you know what? I'm excited. I didn't plan a huge itinerary. And so I'm just going to go and travel and work with the concierge. And Barcelona is a great walking city, as you know, and just enjoy myself.
And but I mean, as far as anxiety or apprehension, it just seems like I did this once years and years ago in Florida. I'm like, you know, I was with my family, and then they went on. I'm going to stay a few days, and I wasn't quite able to do it after the second day. I kind of drove myself crazy and cut it short.
Really?
Yeah.
You know what?
For I was me, younger then. But
I did it over the holiday week on purpose.
Just a trial run?
To give myself a little bit less anxiety about being gone. So the 4th of July falls on a Tuesday. Monday's a half day. Wednesday, a little bit slow, obviously.
Right.
And to give me a little bit of less anxiety with work. But also from the standpoint of we're a growing company, and I need to think, and I'm a big writer. I like to write and to try to live that kind of European fantasy out of a movie, right? Oh,
good.
I'm going to go
you.
And open the windows and write for a couple of days, but we'll see what happens.
It's exciting. I hope you do it.
And thank you.
From what I know of you, it's the sort of thing that you would probably encourage a lot of other people to do.
Oh,
if they have the ability to
do it. Absolutely. Whether you do it for a long weekend or a week, it doesn't make a difference.
Right.
The key is to step out of your comfort zone at work and in your personal life, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Okay, so I got a place for paella.
Okay, I'll take it.
In Barcelona, although I think it's better in the south. So you're going to drive south out of Barcelona?
Yeah, so I'm going to drive out and drive along the coast to... No, I guess I go north out of Barcelona to Monte Carlo. Isn't that north? Isn't France north of Spain?
Oh, my God. Yeah,
I'm
it
looking
is.
At the
it
map.
Is.
I
yeah,
know
it
you
is.
Go
yeah,
right.
It is. Yeah. Okay, well, I think maybe you should be apprehensive.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Hopefully, as someone told me, they said, I think that's where Princess Grace died.
Yeah,
or
stay off that road. That particular road is not one to see. All right. Well, listen, have a safe trip. I can't wait to hear about when
so
you come back.
So I'll see
back.
You in 2 weeks.
All right, good. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right, everyone's getting outside. The parade's coming up this weekend and next week. A lot of cookouts and all of that. How about a lake? You want to build a lake? Maybe put one in your backyard. A little bit later on the program, we'll talk to Nate Herman of Herman Brothers Lake and Land Management. Well, they do a lot of things. They'll stock fish for a pond or build decks, docks, all of that. But one of the things they do is they'll dig a lake on your property. So I just thought I thought that was kind of interesting. We'll talk to Nate about that a little bit later. They got a great logo. They got a great name for their business, so they're all set. So they probably don't need help from Ross Kimborowski today, maybe in the future. He's the CEO of CrowdSpring. And I could certainly use his help. Maybe you can, too. A great idea, great-looking business, and he joins us now on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Ross, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks so much, Steve. Happy to be here.
All right, so tell me about CrowdSpring and what it is, the model that you do. Let me just tell you, so I have a little travel business. SteveBertrandTravel.com. And, you know, and when it comes time to for labels or a logo, I go to Vistaprint and I let them pick something out for me. And then it's time to pick more labels or more logos. And, you know, I'm kind of lost in that. I've never taken that step up to develop a professional logo, which can be really important. And that's the kind of thing you do. Now, I love the way you do it. Explain it for me.
Sure. CrowdSpring helps small businesses, entrepreneurs, agencies, and nonprofits with naming and design for pretty much every state of their growing business. So unlike what you might get from a template, so you were talking about right. Vistaprint, where you're going to get templates, that will not set your business apart from everybody else. You will have thousands of businesses who have a similar template. And branding today has become more important. You have a lot more noise in the marketplace. There's more competition. And so our community, we have over 200,000 designers and writers, has helped tens of thousands of small businesses, entrepreneurs with professional custom logo design. So the process is very different. Typically, you're hiring a freelancer to give you one or two example designs.
Right.
On CrowdSpring, when you post your project, and we actually help you post it, we take you through some questions. Designers submit actual designs, not bids and proposals to do the work. So in a logo project, you're picking from 100 actual logos for your new business, as opposed to looking at bids for people to do the work prospectively.
I got to tell you, I was having a gas online. I went to your website today, and you know, there's a way to walk through it, and you could actually see projects in development. Someone who'd made a suggestion for a logo or something like that, and then see what the creatives around the country have sort of offered as possibilities. And it's, I suppose the creatives, the artists, love it as well because it's a way to pick up a little extra work.
Well, it is. So the beauty of the model is we have over 200,000 of them. Half are in the U.S., half are in 200 countries around the world. So it is a way to pick up extra work, and some of our creatives work full-time at this. It's a way for them to also compete and learn and continue to expand their portfolio. The reality is, despite the fact that some businesses are paying thousands and tens of thousands of dollars for logo design and other kinds of design, in fact, big companies pay millions, projects on CrowdSpring start from a few hundred dollars. Professional logo design does not have to cost an exorbitant amount of money. And so we help businesses get away from the high risk and high prices, and more importantly, lack of choice.
Right. So the idea is, again, you put in your information and then it goes out. And I would imagine the creatives have access to different projects. They pick one, they develop a logo, and then they just submit it. And you get a screen, like you said, I don't know, did you say up to 100 different choices? But you can look at different things that have sort of been pitched, see what you like, and then refine it from there.
Exactly. You can iterate with the creative. So all of the project management takes place on CrowdSpring. We've built very powerful tools. It's very simple to post. So this takes days, a matter of days, to from the start where you tell us what you need to people participating to you getting the final designs. And the other benefit on CrowdSpring, and we're unique in the marketplace. We've been at it for 10 years. We've always thought to protect intellectual property because you're buying intellectual property. It's
sure.
a brand. And so every design project is protected, every project, even for company names, by a custom legal agreement that transfers the full rights to the intellectual property to the client from the designer. This is often not done because it's expensive. We include it for free as part of a cost of these projects. And so our clients get not only terrific designs at a small fraction of the cost of what it would otherwise cost, they get it quick, they get a lot of choice, and their intellectual property is protected.
All right, so, you know, I want to move beyond logos, but let's just stay there just for the idea of cost. There are different sorts of levels you can go to, but I think the most inexpensive one was a couple hundred bucks. Is that right? Did I see $199 or something like that?
Exactly. So depending on the sophistication of what you need, how many people you want to work with, and the kinds of tools you need. So we work with agencies, with bigger companies that are looking to have teams collaborating in their projects, that are looking to do focus groups and other things. And if they need those, we have all of those available. In fact, focus groups, great thing for any size business, we make available in every project. So once you have a bunch of designs you like, you can privately or publicly share these designs with anyone you want. and have them vote on these designs and give you some feedback so you can get your customers or clients involved in helping you to create your brand.
Are you a Chicago area-based company?
We are. We're just in the West Loop. We've been here since we launched in 2000, started working at it in 2006, but launched in 2008.
And so we're talking about logos here, but let's broaden out a little bit before we get to the logo. I don't know, maybe you picked the logo before you picked the business name. Not likely, but you help even with web design, writing projects, all of that. But let's go to choosing a name for your business. It's important when it comes to setting the brand. How do you guys, how do you help with that? Same sort of thing.
Critical, and you start with a name, of course. You can't really do a logo until you know what the name is. So it's a similar kind of process where we walk you through a series of questions and post your brief for the new brand that you're creating for the new company. And then our creatives from all over the world start submitting names. And this is the really important thing that a lot of people get frustrated about generally. We also give you URLs. So one of the hardest problems picking a name is finding a domain, because everybody needs to be online today. And so in our projects, creatives are not just suggesting a name, but they're also suggesting an accompanying URL that's either available for registration or that can be easily purchased for a small amount of money from a third party. This is one of the frustrating things. So when we named CrowdSpring back 10 years ago, took us 50 hours, and it was a very frustrating experience when we went through that process. And so every business I've named since, and I've launched numerous businesses since, I've gone to our community, because it is so time-consuming and frustrating to name businesses and then have to find URLs. It's well worth $300 to get somebody else to give you hundreds of name possibilities.
All right, we've talked a lot about your company and how people can work with your company. Give us a little candy for free. If I'm coming up with a business, what sorts of things do I need to keep in mind when it comes to coming up with a name for it, or what are some things I should avoid?
So I'll give you five tips. There are sort of five key things that you need to be focused on. Number one, keep it short and memorable, because at the end of the day, you want your customers to remember the name. You want them to be able to recommend it to others. Number two, make it easy to pronounce, spell, and understand, because if they can't type it into a browser, they can't reach you. If they can't communicate it to a friend through email, those friends won't be able to reach you. Number three, focus on the product's purpose and value. So if you have a generic name and people don't understand what you do, you're never going to be able to ultimately persuade them what your products are. So one of the companies we named, for example, is called Quickly Legal, which helps businesses with free legal with legal contracts, manage them, create them. These are business-level contracts. Number four, consider your audience. So names are relevant to the people that are actually looking for your products and services. And so if you have a young audience, younger-sounding names tend to be better. If you have a more mature audience, then you have a different collection. And the last one is you have to make it unique. It has to stand out. So when we named CrowdSpring, that's one really good example. There were businesses called Logo Design Services and other people that had logo design in their name, and nothing was unique about them. It's the same thing if 1,000 travel agencies were called Travel Agency. You couldn't differentiate them. So find a name that stands out and that people can easily recognize. And then if you're working with a group, and this is very common, you have 2, 3, 4 people trying to name a business, keep that team really small and have one person in charge, because when you do anything by committee, including design, the results aren't great.
Someone's going to have to make the decision. Rich Kimborowski, the CEO of CrowdSpring. Hey, it was great to talk to you. I hope we can do it again. Ross, thank you very much. All right. Well, you know, this is the 4th of July weekend coming up. A lot of people are going to be out in the backyard. And I'm just intrigued by Herman Brothers Lake and Land Management. We had them on over the winter time talking about ice fishing, I think. And when I was looking at their website, I saw that one of the things they do is they build lakes or ponds. They will build a pond in your backyard. So I think I'm going to have Nate Herman over to do that for me this weekend. Nate, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hey, Steve, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's talk lakes or ponds. How many of these do you do a year?
Well, so far we have visited over 100 properties this year since we've talked in the winter.
Really?
And that's all across the Midwest. Now, when I say visited, we go in and we do a full lake audit for people that have existing lakes. And I would say about 5% of our consultations are done for people that want to build a lake. So we've gone to a handful where they said, Nate, we have this property. We want to build a lake. What's the next step?
And what is involved in building a lake? You know, if you fill in a lake, you've got to get all sorts of environmental approval, I would imagine. Is it the same thing if you dig a lake?
Yeah, well, for most lakes and ponds, it is a good idea to get a permit to actually construct it, especially if it's going to be over usually about 15 acre feet of water. Then you want to get a permit with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. It's not a hard thing to get, and you just want to make sure that what they want to make sure is that you're not going to dam up a bunch of water and kind of hurt somebody downstream. So, like, and when I say hurt, I mean physically hurt somebody downstream. Your classification of your dam all depends on what is going on downstream. Is there houses? Is there churches? Is there businesses? Is there somebody's, you know, property that would be adversely affected if your dam were to breach?
Is that how you build a typical lake? You're damming up a creek or something like that? I just revealed my country roots. I said creek.
Hey, I love it. Yeah. I still call them cricks, too. The most economical way to build a body of water is to dam up a ravine. You usually can get the most amount of water with the least amount of dirt to move. There are situations where a lot of times in actually subdivisions or neighborhoods or just urban areas where you want a pond, you're not necessarily going to be able to dam up a ravine, but you could go ahead and dig a half acre or three quarter acre or 1 acre pond. That's just a lot more effort. When you're using big machines, that can drive up the cost quite a bit.
Okay, and so promise not to call me stupid. I'm going to ask you stupid questions. If you just dig a hole in the middle of the field, do you rely on a spring to fill it, or how do you fill it with water, and then how do you make that water stay there?
Okay, so if I was just going to dig a hole in the middle of the field, you know, there's a good chance in Illinois, there's a good chance that in 5 to 10 years, it's going to fill up with water.
Okay.
And it would maintain its water, not to the exact same level all the time, but it would maintain its water within 3 to 5 feet fluctuations based on the rainfall. Now that's with no watershed, and that's if it's not going to leak like through a sand vein or a gravel vein.
Okay.
And that's not even recommended. You know, like 5 to 10 years is a long time. So if you're digging a hole. And you're digging a pond where you don't have any watershed, any land draining into there, that area, then you're going to want to have, like, a water source. You're going to want to have a well or a spring or a creek or another body of water nearby to fill it up.
Okay. So
to maintain it. Because nobody wants to see their pond down 3 feet, you know, during the month of July and August.
Nobody wants to see that, Nate. Okay, so I want to strike bass in it. Could you give me some bass to put in my lake, too?
Yeah, we love – actually, it's kind of crazy you mentioned striped bass. We've been stocking hybrid striped bass in ponds around here for the last 10 years, and they are quickly becoming one of my favorite pond fish.
Really?
They grow fast, they fight hard, and they taste great.
What more could you ask from a fish?
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, I mean, you guys have talked about – you know, I was listening a little bit. You guys were talking about, you know, corn and beans and wheat and pigs and cows and everything, you know. And it's like, we got to talk about some fish here, you know. Like, what are the fish stocks up this you know, right now?
We're going to do that again. That'll be my excuse to have you back on in the fall. Nate Herman from Herman Brothers Lake and Land Management. I'd love talking to you.
Yeah, well, that would be fun. We'll talk about, you know, fish prices are up about 9%. And, you know, actually, and if you're somebody that's looking to stock a pond, you know, maybe we'll talk about how they're down about 5%, and now's the time to buy your fish stock.
What's your website, Nate?
Herman, it's hblakemanagement.com.
All right, just search Herman Brothers Lake and Land. We'll talk again, friend.
Hey, Steve, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much.